Ninth Canto, Chapter 13, Text 10, chapter entitled The Dynasty of Maharaj Nimi. Deham Am Nana Varutseham Deham Narva Varutseham Dukha Shoka Bhayavaham Dukha Shoka Bhayavaham Sarvatrasya Yato Mrityor Matsyana Mudakeyata. Translation. I do not wish to accept a material body, for such a body is the source of all distress, lamentation, and fear everywhere in the universe, just as it is for a fish in the water, which lives always in anxiety because of fear of death. We'll repeat. I do not wish to accept a material body, for such a body is the source of all distress. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The material body, whether in the higher or lower planetary system, is destined to die. In the lower planetary system or lower species of life, one may die soon, and in the higher planets or higher species, one may live for a long, long time, but death is inevitable. This fact should be understood. In the human form of life, one should take the opportunity to put an end to birth, death, old age, and disease by performing tapasya. This is the aim of human civilization, to stop the repetition of birth and death, which is called mrityu samsara vartmani. This can be done only when one is Krishna conscious or has achieved the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, one must rot in this material world and accept a material body subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. The example given here is that water is a very nice place for a fish, but the fish is never free from anxiety about death, since big fish are always eager to eat the small fish. Palguni Tatra Mahatam. All living entities are eaten by bigger living entities. This is the way of material nature. Ahastani sahastanam apadani chatushpadam palguni tatra mahatam jivo jivasya jivanam. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong, and the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:13:47. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has created the material world in such a way that one living entity is food for another. Thus, there is a struggle for existence. But although we speak of survival of the fittest, no one can escape death without becoming a devotee of the Lord. Harim vina naiva sritim taranti. One cannot escape the cycle of birth and death without becoming a devotee. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.3. Aprapyamam nivartante mrityu sangsara vartmani. One who does not attain shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna must certainly wander up and down within the cycle of birth and death. So this fear. And fear, as long as we have this material body, there will be fear. It's just like sense gratification. As long as we have this body, there will be desire for sense gratification. But for a devotee, according to their level of advancement, this desires for sense gratification and fear of death will be less or less, less. Janma Mrityu Jaravyadi. There is, in this material world, there is birth, death, old age, and disease. And there's constant fear over all of these things. But for a devotee who understands that they're not this body, then they are relieved to a great extent. Just like if you are accused of a crime and you have to go to court and you haven't done anything, but you're accused of a crime and you're very fearful because if you get convicted, then there's a lot of trouble. So the lawyer works on your behalf, and then he comes and tells you, okay, I've worked it all out. Actually, it's proven that that you're not guilty. So there's so much relief. So when we hear, initially, when we hear that we're not this body, then there's a big relief from all the anxieties connected. And that's the beginning of spiritual life. The beginning of spiritual life is to understand that we're not this body. And Prabhupada spoke about that constantly, over and over and over again, because being in the material world, we're just this close to understanding, to thinking that we're the body. At any given time, we can turn away from Krishna and think we're this body. So Prabhupada was always reinforcing this simple fact that we're not this body. So he said that the standard of brahminical life is to reduce eating, sleeping, mating, and defending to nil. Now, when we heard this, there was a lot of fear. So there's the aspect of fear. And actually, Prabhupada would often say, eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. So defending and fearing are the same. We are trying to protect against any problems. So this fearing can also be reduced. In the beginning, without Krishna consciousness, there is, of course, a lot of fears. But we try to forget. We forget about death. You ask people on the street to talk about death. They say, I don't need to talk about death. I want to live. So this is ignorance. And like Prabhupada would say, ignorance. Ignoring the fact that this body is subject to death. So people don't want to talk about that. But actually human life begins when we face the fact that there are so many miseries, so much trouble, and that we're going to die. We want to make a solution to these problems of birth, death, disease, and old age. When I was first joined the movement and I heard Prabhupada speak about this, this fear of death is actually one thing that impels us to seek spiritual life, because it's a great fear. Where to go? Where are we going to go? So that is an impetus for spiritual life. And fear, actually, in general, is an impetus for us to make some change. If we have a cut on our body, we may be fearful that it's going to get worse. So fear has a good aspect to it, so we take care of this cut. And the fear of death is an impetus for us to ask, how can I become free from this? So I was when I first came into Krishna consciousness, I tried to convince my parents. I mean, the next people that I had contact with, living with my parents, I tried to convince them about Krishna consciousness. So they were not so interested. I said to my mother, I mean, aren't you afraid of death? Because Prabhupada said everyone is afraid of death. So she said, no, I'm not afraid of death. And well, that really put, you know, I thought, wow, that confused me. How can she say that? So the next day in class, and Prabhupada asked for questions, I told him, well, my mother said she... You know, I asked him, I said, my mother said she's not afraid of death. And Prabhupada said, they may say, but actually everyone is afraid of death. You give, hand them a gun. Here, say, take this gun. And you kill yourself. No, everyone practically is afraid of death. So just to say that is meaningless. So this fear. So this verse is about fear of death. For a devotee, if a devotee is very advanced, they do not fear death. Just like we had the example of this Prabhupada disciple in the play that you performed, Ladini Mataji. It's very, takes an advanced devotee, but it is possible. And when you understand fully that Krishna is in control and you're living your life daily, every minute, in Krishna's reciprocal service, then accordingly you have that, you understand that Krishna is in control. So it's not that death won't be there or change of body won't be there, but you take this as you're in Krishna's hands, just like the previous purport said, both the mouth and the kitten. Mouse and the kitten are in the mouth of the cat. But for the kitten, the kitten enjoys that protection, whereas the mouse sees only death and is completely afraid. So we shouldn't be on the level of an animal just trying to forget about death. We should face what it is and use that as an impetus for Krishna consciousness. So I would like to talk now about some pastimes that we had with Prabhupada. I'd like to have my wife come up. Also, I'll just explain while they're setting up. The time period that we joined was the late 1960s, and in the U.S., the youth were very disturbed because there was a war with Vietnam, and many people understood that this was a war that was just for some economic purposes, and there was a draft, so they were being forced to go to war for something they didn't believe in. So it caused a lot of distress. There was also at the time a movement to give more better treatment to the Negroes in the South because they were treated just terribly. So the youth of the country were standing for these things, and these were also the times of the baby boomers. There was a large population, large percentage of the population were young because of the war, Second World War. Then the soldiers would come home and they would produce children. So there was a lot of huge population. So there was a lot of strength in the youth at that time. And people were also experimenting with drugs, thinking that drugs were a way to expand, to achieve this bliss, this freedom from all of the suffering and the, because they were, we had everything. We had all material facilities. People were wealthy, either more or less wealthy. Prabhupada used to say that, practically speaking, everyone in the U.S. is wealthy. Not that everyone is a rich man, but especially compared to India, this was such a high standard of living. But yet, there was none of these things were giving us pleasure, long-term happiness or peace. So I also was one of those. I was reading literature on philosophy and psychology and religion. I was reading the Bible and then Eastern literature as well. So I had I was not fixed in one religion, so I was willing to try to learn where was the truth. So that was the atmosphere at that time. I had a job working a few blocks from the temple, and I went in one day, and then I heard the philosophy that you're not this body, and immediately it made sense to me. So I started my practice of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada wasn't there at the time, so even in this very beginning, when there was only two or three temples and a handful of devotees in the whole U.S., still the preaching was going, Prabhupada started, the preaching was going on. So it wasn't until about three months later that Prabhupada came back from San Francisco, and when he came back, didn't go to the airport. Two of us were stayed back and rolling puris or stuffing samosa or something. And we were told that when he came back, we would get called downstairs to meet him. So when he came and he was sitting on his Vyasasada, a devotee came, brought us down and introduced us to Prabhupada, and we bowed down and got introduced to him, and he shook our hands. You have to understand at that time there was such little understanding of any kind of Vaishnava behavior. It was just really like an infant, just like you would treat an infant. You would just teach them little by little. So the morning class, at that time there was a morning class Monday, every morning, Monday through Friday, Srimad Bhagavatam class, 7 a.m. No Mangal Arati, no deities. It was no deities. We didn't know what a deity was. We had pictures, and they were respected. When we had kirtan, there was a picture of Lord Chaitanya, and we would offer up, because Prabhupada taught a little bit, and during the kirtan, someone would take up a little lamp, deep, and or incense, and just offer to the picture, and then they would pass this incense to somebody else, and they would offer all during the kirtan. And the morning class, Prabhupada was speaking about teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. So it was very applicable, again, because we were all very young, and here was a five-year-old boy who was Krishna conscious. So if he can do it, if a five-year-old boy can do it, then we can. So it was very inspiring. At the time, my parents were afraid that they didn't know, understand what it was, so they thought it might be another avenue for drug taking, something from the East, very exotic. So they wanted to come and meet Prabhupada. So they came and they spent time with him. And my father asked, "Well, wouldn't it be good if he continues going to school, maybe become a doctor?" And Prabhupada said, "Yeah, there's so many doctors available. You just pay $10." And you get a doctor. But there are so few Krishna conscious men. We want to make Krishna conscious. We want to make Krishna conscious men. So Prabhupada was also praising me in front of them that your son is very intelligent. And so my mother was easily won over because of that. Whereas my father was, my father liked to debate. You know, like men like to argue, very competitive, men are competitive, and like to win arguments, and he was like that, political debater. And so he wasn't won over very easily. So at one point in front of them, at least that's what I heard, Prabhupada said, "Between the two of them, the wife is more intelligent." So he couldn't say anything in front of, how could he say to, in front of, "No, wait a second, I'm more," you know, that would be very, as we say, tacky. He couldn't say, "No, I'm more intelligent," you know, immature. So he was, Prabhupada in his own way was needling him for his unsubmissive kind of nature. So he was teased, you know, he was competing with, you know, he defeated him that way. So at the time, everyone would try to get any kind of association with Prabhupada, anything. He would come down from his room for class, Brahmananda, the temple president. You know Brahmananda? Okay. He would carry down Prabhupada's Bhagavatam and his watch. Somehow the Mridanga came down. There was a Mridanga, and I was one of the early Mridanga players. So those items had to get carried back up after class to his apartment. So I had the Mridanga. That was my possession. And I wanted to carry that up in the hopes that he would speak to me when we were alone. So in his apartment, there was a window between his bedroom, which he also used as his office, and the living room, which he used as a sort of deity room. He had a little altar. In between this window, he could see someone who came in. So I would bring the Mridanga up, and then sometimes I would hear Madhusudan, and my heart would just flutter. Mm. So I would go into his room, and one time he asked me, "How are your parents?" And because he had met them. So I said, "Yeah, they're all right, they're fine." And he said, "You know, actually, you are the father of your father." And I said, "Whoa." I said, "What is that? What does that mean?" He said, "Well, father means one who gives birth to the child into life. So Krishna consciousness means eternal life. And because you come to Krishna consciousness first, you're giving him birth into eternal life." He said, "So you are the real father." Another time that I got called into his room, he asked me, he said, "Do you have any brothers or sisters?" And I said, "Yeah, I have one brother, older brother." He said, "Oh, is he interested in Krishna consciousness?" And I said, "No, he has a really good job and a nice new wife." And to Prabhupada said, "Oh, he is Pukka atheist?" So, yeah, he wasn't interested, but of course later on he was favorable. He was not anti, and became more and more favorable. He actually named a cat that he had Hare Krishna. So that means, you know, Prabhupada would say, even if you say Hare Krishna in a bad way, those Hare Krishnas, or in the newspapers, if they would say something bad about the Hare Krishna, Prabhupada said any publicity is good publicity. So he got some benefit that way. So one time after class, this is again in the first few months that Prabhupada came back. Maybe I told this story already before, but I asked him, I said, "I heard that there was an ocean of milk." The devotee said there was an ocean of milk. "Is there really an ocean of milk?" And he said, "Come, I will drown you in it." So you heard that before, yeah.
I started coming to Krishna consciousness in the year of 1967, around October, but I was living at home, 16 years old, and when I started coming, I had a feeling it wouldn't sit very well with my family. But right when I started coming to the temple, I saw it was such a wonderful atmosphere, you know, very family-like. All the devotees knew each other, even if they were not in New York. You know, we knew the devotees in San Francisco by name, how they were doing. So it was just really wonderful right from the start, hearing about Srila Prabhupada, Krishna. Anyway, as time went on, it was inevitable. I had to, you know, I wanted to imbibe that way of life. And so at home, I was still going to school. I set up an altar and, you know, I'm just kind of giving a synopsis, because I wrote this all to Srila Prabhupada. I was telling him everything I was doing, just being a young 16-year-old. I wanted to be honest and tell him everything. So at one point, my family knew I wanted to be a devotee, and so my mother got very upset, and she wouldn't let me go to the temple. She said, you can go anywhere else, do anything you want, but don't go to the temple. So anyway, at this point, I wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada, and I had already been initiated by that time. And so I sent the letter to Srila Prabhupada, a 6-page letter explaining what I was doing, every single thing. And Srila Prabhupada was so kind, just like a loving father. I mean, he's always been so encouraging. And he wrote, my sincere blessings are for you, for your nice prosecution of Krishna consciousness. Whatever you are doing at the present moment is approved by me. And I think on account of you becoming a sincere soul, Krishna is dictating from within, and you are doing things so nicely. And then at one point he wrote, I am very glad that you don't go out and keep indoors engaging yourself in Krishna consciousness activities. And this letter was very, very encouraging and a lot of support in every which way, because when I became initiated, you know how devotees feel such happiness and ecstasy. I was laughing and crying, just learning my spiritual name, and my mother saw it. She got really alarmed and sent me to a psychiatrist. And I was like, oh, I was just so beside myself because, you know, the psychiatrist was asking me a questionnaire just to see if I was normal, a normal functioning human being. So I was all along, I was praying, but at the same time, I had received this letter by then from Srila Prabhupada, and I felt such support, because at the end of the letter, he wrote, if you ever have any difficulty, so continue your present activities and chant your beads. Whenever there is some difficulty, consult Brahmananda, which he was our temple president, or write to me, and Krishna will help you more and more on the path of perfection. So anyway, just having that letter gave me such inner strength, and I was praying. It made me pray a lot. And at one point, the psychiatrist said to me, what is it that you want? And I said, I just want to be allowed to go to the temple. I work harder in school, and I was living far away from the temple. I just want to be allowed to go on the weekends. I had a god sister whose parents were much more favorable. They moved closer to the temple for her to go, and they allowed me to be there on the weekends. So the psychiatrist told my mother, I see no problem with her going to the temple. And so it was like it just unfolded that I was able to go to the temple after that. So that was really a wonderful breakthrough. At home, I was always quite engaged, you know, chanting rounds, working homework, offering, just that was a whole upset to my family. You know, I would wash all the pots beforehand and cook and offer prasadam to Lord Jagannath. I was taking care of someone's deities. They were about this tall, beautiful Lord Jagannath deities. And so here I was following the 4 regulative principles. My mother was like distraught, but she just kind of stepped back. And at one point, one of the things I was doing, I was painting, doing watercolor paintings, which in later years, Srila Prabhupada had written me a letter later on. Please, you know, paint. We need immense artwork done for the Krishna consciousness movement. So I worked in the art department later on after a while. But at home, when I was alone, I was painting watercolor paintings of Krishna and different pastimes. And at that time, we just had Brij Basi Prince. So that was, even that was very inspiring. So I was started working on a painting of Krishna offering prasadam to a cow and petting the cow with his other lotus hand. And All of a sudden, I heard a devotee named Rai Rama, my godbrother, was going to San Francisco to see Srila Prabhupada. So this is right after I got initiated, and I was thinking, oh, I really want to give Srila Prabhupada an offering. So I worked on this painting, and finally, I mean, I was really making sure it would get done on time. And when I finished it, I bought a frame, a wooden frame, and painted it with gold paint, and then gave it to Rai Rama to give to Srila Prabhupada. So I was back in New York. And, oh, by the way, in those days, I think you mentioned it already in the past, that whenever a letter from Srila Prabhupada came, it would always go to the temple, and I would always be like the last one to read it because I was living at home. But when I came to the temple, it was already open, but because all the Prabhus wanted to read it, you know. But anyway, so Rai Rama came back, and so I was like really eagerly waiting to hear if he had given it to Srila Prabhupada safely. And he said he gave it to Srila Prabhupada, and he said he had, Srila Prabhupada immediately had the painting hung over his bed. So that made me so happy. That was really mercy.
At this time, she was 16 years old, so quite young, and I was 18. So my relationship with Prabhupada was very much like a young son. There was a first wave of devotees were older, like Brahmananda, Satsvarupa, Hayagriva, Kirtanananda. They were all about 6 years older. So that was a big difference at that time, if you were 18 or if you were 25, 26. That was a big difference. So they were more of the leaders, and I was just a young boy, very immature. Like she was saying, that whenever a letter came, everyone would just crowd around, and the letter would be read out loud, because it wasn't very personal. It was this philosophy, questions asked, and it was applicable to everyone. So that was a big excitement when a letter came from Prabhupada. Of course, the person who it came to was quite excited, but everyone else was also excited. Everyone would gather around and listen to this letter. Now, also when Prabhupada was there, occasionally he'd had darshans, so just meetings, informal meetings, besides the kirtan, in his room. So one time there was a darshan, and Prabhupada turned to me and said, he said, you're so skinny. He said, how come you're so skinny? And I didn't know what to say. Then he turned to the cook, and he said, how come your godbrother is so skinny? So he also didn't know what to say. And then he turned to me again, and he said, well, how come you're skinny? Don't you eat? I think he was thinking that I must be doing false renunciation, not eating. So I said, no, I eat a lot. I eat, sometimes I eat so much that I get sick. I don't know if you've experienced that here, but back at those times, like if there was a Sunday feast and all these nice preparations, very often devotees would eat so much, they were just, their stomachs were in pain. They didn't know how to just eat the right amount. They would just eat and eat and eat. So I said, yeah, sometimes I eat so much that I get sick. He said, oh, no, you shouldn't do that, but you should eat. So that was his. Another time he saw me and I had pimples on my face because I was 18 and young. You know, acne, you know that? Okay, so he said, what is that on your face? So he knew what that was on my face. But I said, well, I have these pimples from, because I'm, you know, when you're 18, when you're young, you get these. He said, oh, you should put a little tilak on each one. So
yesterday we were riding in the car with Adi Keshava Prabhu, and I told him this story, and he said, Tilak. But anyway, Tilak, what it does when it dries, it extracts, pulls a little bit from the skin. It just dries a little bit. So it was actually a good idea to put Tilak on. It would dry out the pimple. So next time I saw him, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't walk around the streets of New York with pimples on, with tilak on, little dots all over my face. You know, in India, you could get away with that, and people will look, you know, whatever. But in the U.S., you can't do that. So I wasn't wearing it. He said, "Oh, how come you're not wearing the? How come you don't have the tilak on?" And I said, well, I explained to him I couldn't do that, walk around. He said, well, you should take some olive oil in a spoon, heat it up over the fire, and put a little boric acid in there, and you make an ointment out of it. And, you know, boric acid is an astringent. And I told this also to Adi Keshava Prabhu. He said, yeah, boric acid and astringent, that means it dries up also, closes up pores. So that was another good suggestion of Prabhupada. So I did that, put this ointment on it, and it wasn't so white. It was like just a little cream, sort of light, very light cream. So you see, Prabhupada was not just concerned about our spiritual welfare, but he is all-inclusive, his concern about our health, material health and spiritual health. Now, after we all got initiated, we all, you know, have reading the literature, we all wanted to become Brahmins. So, Prabhupada started one initiation of Brahmins. I wasn't in that one. I was the older devotees. And he told us, he said, if you want to become Brahmin, what you do is you wear a clean dhoti every day, and when at night, that clean dhoti, you sleep in that dhoti, and then in the next morning you wash it, and the one that's hung up from the day before, you put that on, you wear a clean dhoti every day, and we'll give you Brahmin thread. I guess you can appreciate that here, when you have to go for 3 years before you can even put on saffron. So you can see Prabhupada, the way he was very encouraging. He was making the movement happen, and he took the risk of giving initiation, sometimes what looked like prematurely, or Brahmin initiation, and some people left, you know, people did leave, but for the most part, the movement started. It caught hold. The fire caught hold. Sometimes you light a fire, one match may not work, another match may not work, but then all of a sudden it catches fire. Yeah?
Okay. Just talking about leniency, I remember when Srila Prabhupada was on Second Avenue up in his quarters, we would get to do service for him, and like cleaning his apartment or washing his dhoti. And I remember one time I was washing his dhoti in the bathtub, and the bathroom is not considered a clean place, but we never got chastised like that in the beginning. But anyway, I was in the middle of washing Srila Prabhupada's dhoti, and he peeked in and he said, "Are you coming to class?" Because at that point, I remember I was rushing to get ready to go down, and I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." At that time, we called him Swamiji. So anyway, I finished up real quickly and ran down. But that was a sign of leniency. One of my god sisters at this point, we'd been initiated and everything. There was a group of us, around five of us, and we were all so eager just to stop going to school and move into the temple to do full-time devotional service. So One of my god sisters, Lila Sukha, wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada asking him, and immediately Srila Prabhupada wrote back, "No, you must finish up high school and get your diploma, or what will society think?" So he was always very encouraging from the start to finish up, and just with his instruction, it just gave us such an inner strength to go on, because it was really hard before getting the letter. And just to receive his instruction, we were able to get through and graduate.
Hmm. Prabhupada spoke about, at the time that Prabhupada came, he only came with his Bhagavatam, the three original Bhagavatam. You've seen them, they all printed in India. So he brought some of those over with him. Not all, because he kept some still in India and he would gradually have them shipped over. But he came with his volume 1, 2, and 3 of First Canto. And that was it. There was no Bhagavad Gita, and yet Bhagavad Gita is the real main beginning, ABCs of spiritual life. So I think all there was just some chapters printed in manuscript. So he had the manuscript of it, but it was not printed. So he told us that we could get this Bhagavad Gita, the translation by Dr. S. Radhakrishnan. He was the prior president of India. So Prabhupada said that he was a Sanskrit scholar and that he translated the verses well. So we could read that Bhagavad Gita, he said, but do not read the purports. So there is one famous purport that Prabhupada would talk about all the time and blast Dr. Radhakrishnan for, because he was an impersonalist. So you're not supposed to read anything by impersonalists. So his commentary on the verse, just offer your obeisances to me. Think of me, offer your obeisances to me, offer everything to me. He said in the purport, it's not to the person Krishna that we must bow down to, but to the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna. And the Prabhupada was fiery about that. That was total impersonalism. And so he would speak about that. And then he had this little saying, because Dr. Radhakrishnan, I remember Prabhupada was a few times he was saying, this is really early on when I didn't have so much understanding, but he would say, we've had so many lifetimes. He said, just give this one life to Krishna, just one. I thought that was, in one way, that was bewildering, like, because at the same time you had to accept that you've had many lifetimes to give one life. So it was nice. He was planting that seed. Just give this one life to Krishna. And the way we give he explained the way we give our life to Krishna is that we say internally, Krishna, from this day, I'm yours. And that is the process of surrendering, the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Just to say, from this day, Krishna, I am yours.
I was going to mention, we went to Montreal. A lot of the devotees from New York went up to Montreal to see Srila Prabhupada. And at this point, it was in 1968, so I don't remember what month it was. It was cold, so it was must have been late fall, winter. Anyway, the temple, they just got a new building. It was a bowling alley. And for us, that was like huge, because the temple on 26th Second Avenue is quite small, you know, very narrow and, you know, not very big. So to see this temple room in Montreal, it was like really big. Anyway, so we were up there. And at one point, at this time, devotees were trying to protect Srila Prabhupada more, that he had his rest and not having everyone barge in all the time, because of course everyone was always so eager to see Srila Prabhupada. And anyway, so he had an apartment a few blocks away, and no one knew where he was staying except, you know, maybe a handful of devotees. So at one point, a devotee went up to me and asked me, "Can you bring this bag of boga over to Himavati, who was Srila Prabhupada's servant at the time? It was fruit and just whatever she needed to prepare for Prabhupada, because he was leaving to go on a plane to another temple later on that morning." So I was given directions how to get there, and I carried the bag over. And so when I got to the door, I didn't hear anything, and I didn't want to make any disturbance, so I knocked very softly on the door. And Himavati opened the door about that much, and I discreetly handed the boga to her. And the corner of my eye, I saw Srila Prabhupada in his flowing saffron robes chanting japa, sitting down in the room. And she was just about to close the door, and Srila Prabhupada asked Himavati, "Who's at the door?" And Himavati said, "Kanchanbala came to bring boga." And Srila Prabhupada said to her, "Tell her to come in." And I was like, it just melted me. I just like bowed down and offered obeisances. And then Srila Prabhupada said, "Sit down." And so I was alone in the room with Srila Prabhupada chanting japa together. And it was just so nice just being with Srila Prabhupada. It was beyond my wildest dreams, you know, because I wasn't expecting that. I just wanted to do the seva and go, you know, not disturb him, but here he was giving his kindness to me. So we were chanting japa together, and I know a lot of my god brothers and god sisters, they asked Srila Prabhupada so many questions. I wanted to ask Prabhupada a question, but I didn't till later on. I'll tell that story. But at this point, I was thinking, what can I ask Srila Prabhupada? And anyway, so I was chanting japa with him. And at one point, Srila Prabhupada asked me, "How's it outside?" And I said, "It's very cold, Srila Prabhupada." And then we were chanting more. And at one point, devotees came, and they sat in front of me around Srila Prabhupada in a semicircle, temple presidents. There were no sannyasis or GBC at the time. And so it was just very peaceful. And at one point, Himavati came in with a plate of cut-up fruit and cookies. So Srila Prabhupada took a few bites from the plate, and then he started handing out the prasadam individually to everybody. And then I didn't want to lean over everybody, but immediately Srila Prabhupada looked up at me with his eyes big. "Did you get?" And I immediately leaned over everybody to get some maha prasadam. And so this happened three times. Srila Prabhupada was individually handing out maha prasadam. So that was so nice. So I don't know if you have something in between to we saw.
Do we still have more time?
Do we have time?
Huh?
Do we have time? Well, this was in New York when we were still at Second Avenue. I was about 17 years old. I've been in the movement for a year now. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada really encouraged the girls to get married, that everyone should be married. But at the same time, the brahmacharis were encouraged to be brahmacharis. So it's just how that's how it was. And so I was still living at home. Things were kind of smoothing out, you know, being accepted, you know. And at one point, the temple president arranged for Madhusudan Prabhu and I to be engaged. So he called up my house, and that was... My mother was just getting used to the fact of, all right, she's a devotee. Then when she got an inkling that we were now engaged, that really got her upset. And at that time, people could see Srila Prabhupada more easily for darshan, or to, like Madhusudan's parents, Prabhu's parents. My mother wanted to talk to Srila Prabhupada. And one thing, my mother was never violent or outrightly rude, and very kind of quiet spoken. So the devotees gave time when Srila Prabhupada was in New York to so she could see him. So she went up. I didn't go, but devotees told me afterwards what their interaction was. But before I heard, which I'll say, I asked my mother, "What did you think?" I was so excited that she was getting an association with Srila Prabhupada, a pure devotee. And she said, "He was very nice. I didn't understand a word he was saying." And that she fulfilled, that Srila Prabhupada fulfilled my fatherly image, which was so nice because my father wasn't living at home. And so just for her to see that Srila Prabhupada's my father, that I felt she had such benefit. And when she was talking with Srila Prabhupada, she asked, you know, I want my daughter to meet other men. And Srila Prabhupada explained to her, no, the Vanashram system, the woman's always protected, you know, from her young years, her middle years, and old age. And then when she left, Srila Prabhupada turned to one of the devotees and said, "Just see, she wants her daughter to be a prostitute." But anyway, out of all this, she agreed to us getting married. And at one point, Madhusudan Prabhu wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada because he wasn't sure. He was going back and forth because, you know, that's just how it was. And Srila Prabhupada wrote the most beautiful letter, and making it so clear, he said, "I give clear sanction that you get yourself married to Kanchanbala Dasi at the earliest possible date. From your side, I have agreed, and from her side, her mother has agreed." So that was like clear as a bell. So that was nice. And then shortly afterwards, I don't know what month it was, but we went up to see Srila Prabhupada, Madhusudan Prabhu and I, and then this other couple, Uddhava and Leela Sukha, and she was the same age as me. So we went up to Srila Prabhupada's quarters, and we sat down, and it was just so ecstatic to be with Srila Prabhupada. And at one point, I was thinking, a young 17-year-old girl, you know, still going to school, and I was thinking, I don't want to get married. I'm happy being, you know, just serving Krishna. And, you know, I was thinking this in my mind. I didn't really say anything to anybody. And I was just thinking that independent streak. But anyway, we were in the room with Srila Prabhupada. And at one point, there was a silence. And I asked Srila Prabhupada, "What does my name mean?" Because I had no idea, you know, after being initiated for quite a while, you know, a year and a half, "What does my name mean?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Kanchanbala. Kanchan means golden, and Bala means child or woman, and it's one of the names of the gopis." And immediately he said, "And women are never independent." And my mouth just dropped. It's like he could read my mind. And he said, in her whole life, she's always protected from childhood. Her father protects her in her middle of her life. Her husband she has protection from her husband, and then with her children in old age, her son. So that really was wonderful, because Srila Prabhupada, he could see what devotees were thinking. So many times I have a god sister, she wasn't chanting her 16 rounds, and she happened to be going on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada with a group of devotees. And she was thinking, "Oh, I hope Srila Prabhupada doesn't ask or say anything." And sure enough, with everyone there, he turned to her and asked, "Are you chanting your 16 rounds?" So, so Srila Prabhupada's so kind.
One last interaction that's pretty instructive. We found in one of Prabhupada's purports this verse, this mantra, in the first, I think it was the first volume of the first canto. It was, Hey Krishna Govinda Hare Murari, Hey Nata Narayana Vasudeva. So we got excited that, wow, these are names of Krishna's, another mantra, and we were chanting it. We had a big stringed instrument. We were strumming like anything and having a really exciting kirtan. And so we thought we'd do that for Prabhupada when he came. So we were chanting that, having a great kirtan before he came down. And then we came in into the storefront. We all offered our obeisances and got up. He got on the Vyasasana. And he said, Oh, where have you gotten that mantra? And we said, Oh, we saw it in your Bhagavatam, Prabhupada. And he said, Oh, you must not chant this mantra. Our mouths dropped. These are Krishna's names. Why shouldn't we chant this mantra? He said, The mantra has to be received through the Sampradaya. There's a verse, which I don't recall the Sanskrit. But unless a mantra is coming through the Sampradaya, down from the Sampradaya, it should not be chanted. He said, even they are Krishna's names, they should not be chanted. So that was very instructive. Of course, we were all kind of disappointed and felt bad that we had, you know, done something unbona fide. He said, Oh, you would like another mantra to chant? And everyone went, Yeah. So he started chanting, Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adoita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So that's when he introduced that more in kirtan. Previously, it was only recited as part of the Mangalacharana prayers. But then we introduced that in kirtan, so we were chanting that. Anything more?
One in 1975.
Yeah?
In Hyderabad.
Yeah.
In 1975, Srila Prabhupada was in India, and that was the opening of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and Srila Prabhupada did the first artik, which was so wonderful. The temple was like jam-packed with everyone in Vrindavan. But anyway, we were traveling around. Madhusudan Prabhu was working on the press. At that time, it was in the midst of being from ISKCON Press to BBT. Because right after India, the whole press from New York moved to Los Angeles. Anyway, I was doing Sankirtan, so at that time, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books and magazines. And anyway, so we got to all go to India, and it was our first time. And I remember I was around in my early 20s at the time. Anyway, we were in Hyderabad at this point, and Srila Prabhupada was giving lectures at the Hyderabad Pandal, but there was a devotee farm in Hyderabad, so we were all there. And just to set the scene, it was very, very primitive, and it was our first time in India, and so we were very, very sick. I mean, I remembered I had amoebic dysentery, lost 20 pounds, really, really sick. But the potency of a pure devotee is no matter what you're going through, anything, you know, in service or whatever, whenever he just takes notice, looking in your direction, speaking to you, everything just melts away. It's just so wonderful. Anyway, so we were waiting for a ride to get to the Hyderabad Pandal to Srila Prabhupada's lecture, and Srila Prabhupada was about to go in his car, and he saw a group of us Matajis waiting for our ride, which we ended up riding in a big truck stacked with hay, and we were just kind of sitting on top to get to the Hyderabad Pandal. But anyway, when Srila Prabhupada saw us, he said, Are you going to my lecture? And we went, Oh, yes, Srila Prabhupada. And at one point, he said to us, Do you like India? And just remember, I was just saying we were all really very not well at all. And we went, Yes, Srila Prabhupada. And he said, Better than America? We went, Yes, Prabhupada. So, but right, him asking that, it just made us so joyful. It didn't matter what shape we were in. We made it to the lecture too. Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada told one amusing little story to explain how they're cheaters and cheated, that the whole world is just cooperation of the cheaters and those who want to be cheated. He said in India there is a class of women who think that it's very auspicious to have a child by a sannyasi. So they will go and seduce a sannyasi to have a child by them. But then there's also a group of men who understand this, and they dress up as sannyasis in order to become seduced by those women. So this is a society of cheaters and the cheated. Another thing that Prabhupada always emphasized, and I think we can end with this, Prabhupada always emphasized that Vani was more important than Vapu, that the instructions of the spiritual master are more important than just being close to him physically. Because you can, he explained that if you're with the spiritual master but your mind is somewhere else, then you're not with the spiritual master. And if you're away from the proximity of a spiritual master but you're doing service, then you're united with him. And I can see that even further than that, devotees here who understand the importance. That you understand the importance of the instructions of Prabhupada, and I can see that everyone is very nicely advancing in Krishna consciousness just by following the instructions of your guru, who's following the instructions of his guru, Srila Prabhupada. So thank you very much. We really appreciate being here, and we hope you'll have us back again sometime. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Radhanath Maharaj ki jai. Jai. Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
We would like to express our gratitude to Madhusudan Prabhu and Kanchan Bala Mataji, because very rare do we get certain insights into the earlier, because we have heard or seen videos more of Srila Prabhupada as a world acharya traveling, but those very, very intimate in the early days, the intimate, like we were discussing, I'm a part of the devotee care committee and we were discussing about caring. So this thing about Tilak, Prabhupada, you know, so much concern about the health. Somebody is very skinny, somebody has pimples or whatever. Each, you know, so we just see only one aspect, the spiritual part, but the overall perspective we get only when we hear about this very, very intimate interactions with the earliest devotees who are practically completely new to this. So we are very, very fortunate. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki. We would like to express our gratitude to both of them in our traditional style. Rio! 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 Rio!